Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. This week, I continue to clean out my archives with a show I recorded in March of last year, with my good friends Tommy Awad Jr. and Travis Voles. Tommy starts the show with a story about staying next door to his uncle, Shuri Roo Chief Instructor Mike Awad. I then get distracted and complain about the cable company for a while, before Travis and Tommy start going through my bookshelf. At the end of the show, I talk about a few times I was surprised to find people in my apartment when they weren't supposed to be there. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
So, tell the story again about last night in the Ki.
Oh, last night's Ki.
Yeah.
Should I get in the detail?
Well, you can say as much as you want, but understand that it will be published at a certain point. So you can creatively edit it. You know,
will it be okay? Edited.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to give the. Already edited version.
Yeah.
Just already. The already edited version.
The version I heard was already tamed down. Wow.
I'll save you some time.
Okay.
Well, let's see here. Where do I start at? Well, Ripman, Travis, and I are over at the bar. And we had a good night. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, man. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
The best St. Patrick's Day I've ever had. So I come home with a... you know, a female friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And,
new acquaintance.
Yeah, new acquaintance. And, anyways, we'll just fast forward time to about 4:12 in the morning.
Okay.
I happen to look at my cell phone at 4:12. Well, I was sitting there, I looked at my cell phone only because I was startled by this big booming noise with, like that. And immediately I was full asleep, I woke up, my eyes stare at the ceiling and go, I think there's a squatch in these woods. But I really knew who it was. So then I'm sitting there, I thought he just did one of them. But here he goes firing off a dozen. He just let it happen. And it was a real quiet night.
This is 4 in the morning.
This is 4 in the morning. I'm like, man, if I can hear this inside my house, I can't imagine what his neighbors think. And this is carrying across the street to the school and everything. So I was like,
right. He doesn't live out in the country. I mean, it's the middle of town. There's a neighborhood.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's like, you can spit on the house next door. I mean, this is like a 12 gauge going off. Boom, boom, boom.
Oi, oi, oi.
So I think he knew I was there because he's seen the lights on in the house. So he thinks he's going to roust me up by throwing his key eyes off.
Hmm.
So I let him go, let him throw off a few and open up the window, and I was cracking up laughing the entire time. I mean, I couldn't even get a decent key eye out because I was laughing so hard. She's asleep, and here I am going through the house, opening up windows, and doing oi! Back at them like two silverback gorillas calling to each other. Man, it was so funny. And then after he fired off about a dozen of them, he comes back and he goes, "Ooh, ah," real loud. Right before the sun came up, and that was it. I shut my window. And,
well. So my question is, did he do this just because you were there, or does he do this every day?
Well,
you happen to be there.
I just happen to be there, but I think the times I'm there, the lights go on the house, and I think he sees me. But I've been there twice, and it's happened. So, you know,
I've heard him talk about it up at the dojo before. He's talked about going out there and doing ki-eyes at 3 and 4 in the morning, and I. you know, I kind of laughed thinking it was a joke.
I can definitely concur.
But I guess it's not a joke. I guess he doesn't.
He can't sleep. You know, they said that Choki Motobu, when he couldn't sleep at night, he would wake up and do kata. But I guess since Awan wakes up and he wakes everybody else up, you know.
Boy. Well, he told me he likes to
do it. Maybe he was running katas over there.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's getting iron on the punches.
Really, really emphasizing
it. It was the end of Tensho.
4 a.m.
Oh, man. Oh, he said he likes to hear his echo bounce off the school. And he goes, you gotta wait until the air gets real calm at nighttime so it carries the voice. Thursday night, I guess a police officer had a car pulled over. And, you know, the officer's outside the car writing tickets. And this was like 10:30, and I had the TV on, I had the radio on, I could still hear him booming key eyes through the house. And I look out, I go, hey Shannon, look, there's a police officer out there, and says they was firing off, the police officer looking to his left, looking to his right, looking for like, what's this girl, it must be a wild ape running around the streets. He didn't know what the thing. Man, it's so funny to hear.
Yeah.
They were good. They're really powerful. Loudest key I ever heard. Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys doing today? You're picking up something for the
shop? Yeah, running some errands, picking up some barber chairs.
Yeah.
Fixing some saws.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah, another typical work Sunday.
Yeah. You got to go to work later today, right, Travis?
Yes, sir.
Sounds like fun.
Should be one of the dojo later today. That's what we should be doing.
Yeah, man. Okay, well, we can go work out after this.
Oh, there's Sensei.
Oh, all right. Let's take a call. Let's get on tape. Go for it.
Hello? He's got the cable man coming to fix his cable.
Cable man, yeah.
Yeah, he blew a cable out of the big old key eye right on it from the back of the box.
Yeah, he said he pays for full cable and not a half cable. Half cable man, half stations. He goes, look at this shit. Can't get my music stations.
Yeah, because every time you go on their site, he has the music on the background.
Oh, yeah. The music stations are pretty important when you pay for
them. Travis likes them all the time. I put it
on the soundscapes and whatnot.
You can pick for everything like reggae, rock, blues.
Well, I have the box that can do it, but I don't want the goddamn thing. When I called to have him hook the cable up, I was trying to get the price and stuff like that, and they're telling me, it's like, oh, yeah, it's $60 a month, and I'm like, man, I'm not paying $60 a month for this. I always want basic cable. I want, you know, whatever it is, a 30-channel, something like that. It's like, oh, it is. Our basic cable package is $85. I'm like, what are you talking about? You can get all the premium stuff, but the basic is more? Oh, yes. That makes no sense to me.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. So I'm like, okay, well, give me the basic package. Talking about it, it's something like $30 a month, you know. If you talk to the cable company, they'll always come down.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'll get satellite. You know, I'll screw you guys. I'll go to somebody else. Oh, we have this new deal.
Yeah. But what other business does that?
Yeah, it's a scam. The cable's a scam. But anyway, they kind of hook this thing up, and it takes forever. Like I press the channel, and it waits like 5 seconds, and then it changes, and I'm like, this thing's so frustrating. So I unhooked the TV from the box and plug the TV right into the cable jack in the wall, and now it's awesome. Oh, that's just what I need. You know, I have all the channels I need, and it works, and they actually...
Where's the jack in the wall come from?
It's right behind the bookshelf.
That's already hooked up.
It's already hooked up.
Where's that cable come from?
I don't know.
Oh, you have no idea.
So that's a big...
I'm paying for it.
Oh, okay.
I'm paying for it, but I don't have to use the box, because... Nice. Because it just slows everything down and makes it worse.
Delay.
And who cares? I don't have a... You know, I don't have a high definition TV, it's an old TV, so that's all I need. Okay.
Yeah.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
Jarvis, what were you saying about the books?
Oh, you got a collection over there.
Yeah. What collection? I've been working on it for a while, man. You read any of them?
Oh, there's actually a couple here.
You,
and there.
You know, my dad has Takeyoshi Nagamine's book.
Okay, yeah.
Karate Do.
I got both of those.
I've seen that somewhere.
Black and red.
Right there. Oh, that's true.
It's, no, it's... This is one of them. This is.
I've seen the Pinnacles of Karate by Grandmaster Robert Trias on Amazon, but it must be a.
That looks like it.
It must be a dead. Like, it must be an original one. It was like $800 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was thick.
Yeah, the original Pinnacles are going for a lot.
I wish I had the cash to spend on it. I would have bought it, seriously. Yeah. I know it's a lot, but still, it's priceless.
Because there's not many of them. Because he
they're
published them.
They're original still. Originals.
He published them privately, you know, and there's a certain limited number, and then there was different versions. There's all these different versions that all have different cover. There's one with a black cover, the green. There's like a maroon, a red. I think there's a blue one. So all these different versions, but there's only a certain number of each one. And so, and there's a high demand because there's these people out here who want these books. And then when Roberta, his daughter, started republishing them like in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. So the version down there that I have, the red one, that's the one that she's republished. She edited them and also took out all the photos. Mm. So people want the ones with these photos in them.
Well, of course, yeah.
Because a lot of these guys, if they're in the, especially if they're in the photos, you know, because there's pictures from dojos around the world, so people want the one with their photos in it, but the new ones don't have them. But you can get the new ones for, and that's the one I have down there, for, you know, $100, $120 or something like that. You can find that online. I think Roberta's selling them.
Yeah, I've tried online a couple times, and it always gives you a number to call. I just haven't physically called.
Yeah, and so you can get a hold of there, and that's where I ordered those two. And then everyone else is starting to. And then
the original
Hand is My Sword, but this isn't the original. You know, Sensei Awad has.
I've got a copy just like that, I believe so.
He has the original version from the 50s.
That one?
This one is the reprint from the 70s.
I've got this one.
And those are going for several $100.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, when I was teaching at the University of Illinois, running the karate club, mm-hmm. and I was going there too, they had that version from the 70s. Well, even that one is going for several $100.
Wow. Is it because there's only a certain amount out there?
Yeah, exactly. And so they had one in the library, and I told them, hey guys, you might want to put this in the rare book section where people can't just take it out and borrow it, because someone's going to run off with it. The penalty for like losing a book that you've checked out is something like $100. These things were going for several $100. Mm-hmm. You can sell them for several $100. I'm like, you have to take this out.
Right? Yeah, I might want to check that out.
Yeah. And they're like, nobody, you know, nobody cares. And I'm like, somebody should care. And then guess what? The book disappeared.
Oh, did?
So, of course. Yeah, someone ran off with it because people want it. They're willing to pay $100 for it instead of a couple hundred bucks.
How does someone even know about that book? They should listen to you there for sure.
Well, they know about that book because I was running the Shuri Ryu Karate Club at the University of Illinois. So there was people who were aware of this. Mm. You know, other people in martial arts knew who it was, and they know that it's valuable. So they ran off with it. There's actually a copy at the library in Okinawa too. So I went to the public library in Naha, and there's a copy of The Hand is My Sword. And, you know, you just got to hope that no one's going to run off. I think that's cool, though, that, you know, the Okinawan library has a copy of it. But hopefully it won't disappear.
Yeah, the Okinawan library, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. But this one came from Randy Alley gave me this. He came down here and worked out. And... I think.
Or no, yeah, he was a buddy that came down.
Yeah, he got a hold of got a hold of a few of them because I think there's a library in Canada that was closing or revamping or something like that. And so he was able to buy a bunch of them, and I got one, and I think a couple other people.
The copy you're holding now?
Yeah, yeah, so he gave me this one.
How much did you pay for the one you got, Travis?
It wasn't much, but there was only one, and I guess I got really lucky at the time. I can't even remember exactly how much I paid.
It was just like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much that same exact one. Mm-hmm. I got lucky. There was only one of them on there at the time. Your dad asked me to find him a copy of it and buy him one, and he was going to reimburse me. I think it was around, I think it was 60, 70 bucks I paid for it.
Yeah.
And Mr. Awad asked me to find one. I just haven't got to it. Couldn't find another one on there.
That's just terrible.
And then he told me, he goes, if you can find the Pinnacles of Karate, I would really like it too, but all I could find was the original copy, which is $800.
Yeah.
And the Pinnacles are going that much.
Yeah. So some of them more. You know, I know guys who have signed copies. I don't even know. You know, if they would, they probably would never sell them. But if they did, I mean, you're probably getting close to $10,000 if someone actually would be willing to sell one of them.
If I had one, I wouldn't.
No. That's the thing. People that have them now probably wouldn't. But no, Nagamine's books are good.
I've trained with him.
You trained with his son?
His son.
So that's...
Not the old man.
But it's this guy on the cover. So Nagamine has the two books. The one is...
Soshin?
The Essence of Okinawan Karate Do. This is the one I think was printed in the 70s.
Hey, Russ,
Soshin Nagamine.
I've noticed a lot.
No. The dad is Shoshin Nagamine, and then the son is
Takeyoshi.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And then, so the first one, Essence of Okinawan Karate, came out, I believe, in the 70s. That's more technical. It's about the different strikes and the katas and things like that.
Right.
It has some history in it. But then the one he came out with later, Tales of Okinawa's Great Masters. I mean, that's all the stories and more the history about karate. And this one came out, I think this one came out in the 90s. So both of them are really good. This is a great history book. So if you start off, if you want to interested in the martial arts history, a good one to start off with is The Weaponless Warriors by Richard Kim, which I think actually someone has my copy right now.
I loaned it to, no, I don't. I've got it.
I thought Noah borrowed it from, or did he? Or
yeah, Noah borrowed it, Glenn Smith borrowed it, I think someone else borrowed it. But this, The Weaponless Warriors, this is what you want to start with if you're interested in the history of karate. Because it gives you, it's an easy read, and it gives you kind of a good brief description of each of the guys. Hmm. You know, most important guys and kind of the development of karate. Yeah, take a look.
Let me check that
out. Is that one a Tuttle published book too? Or?
It's either Tuttle or O'Hara. You see
I've noticed a lot of the good martial arts
O'Hara.
Books I've seen
O'Hara.
Published by Tuttle.
Yeah, Tuttle publishes a ton of books on martial arts and Japanese history and culture, and O'Hara does also.
I wonder if you ever see Sensei Iwad mentioned in some of these books.
Yeah, I'm sure he did, because he has that. I know he has that. It is at his house. I've seen that one.
I'm looking on the back here.
But that's a good start. If you were starting, that's one you want to read, The Weaponless Warriors. And then if you're interested in the history, this is my recommendation for the next one, The Tales of Okinawa's Great Masters by Shoshin Nagamine. Because it goes into depth on all these stuff, on all these guys. So it has some of the basic stories, but it'll elaborate on them. It's fairly accurate. You know, The Weaponless Warriors, it's very much kind of like oral history type of deal. So it's... You know, that's the thing about karate. People are always telling these stories and passing these stories. Well, right. Richard Kim finally started writing them down. And Nagamine's took it to the next level. He's done some more historical research. And it's not all absolutely accurate, though.
I'll bet, because after a long period of time like that, things get filtered, you know.
Misconstrued.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not 100%... you know, but it's really good, and it gets you pretty close to whatever actually happened. The one interesting thing is, I think it was Anko Itus. You know, Anko Itus got in quite a few fights, but now there's sort of this effort to make him this, you know, virtuous character, mm-hmm. like the saint. And so, in order to get around that, Nagamine didn't say that he was never in any fights, and he didn't change the story. He just says, there are no stories of him being in any fights.
Oh, okay. Disclaimer there.
So he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that he wasn't in any fights. He says that there are no stories of these. So that's kind of his way of getting around it. And there's another one also that I'm interested in. I think it's Bushi Matsumura. He had a story about him where he was like an exchange student that went back and forth to China. So I can't remember what they're called right now, but Okinawa would send these guys, would send like the young Okinawans over to China to learn culture and history and government and all kinds of things. They'd learn martial arts while they're over there too. And they'd also send trade missions back and forth to China. Well, Matsumura was on, I think it was Matsumura or Sakagawa. I don't know. I'll figure it out and edit in the right name later. But anyway, he was on one of, supposedly according to Nagamine, he was on one of these things. The pirates attacked the ship and he got knocked overboard, picked up by the Chinese Navy and thrown in prison because they thought he was a pirate. And they figured out he wasn't a pirate and he was let go and things like that. But there's a record of a guy in the historical book also, which if you want to learn about Okinawan history outside of the martial arts, this is the one you want to go to. You want to go to Okinawa, History of an Island People by George H. Kerr. He originally wrote it back in the 50s following World War II, but it's been revised and updated since then. But in this one, there is... They do mention that event, but they don't give the name of Matsumura or Sakagawa, whoever it was, I can't remember. But they don't give that him. There's a different name that they give. So, you know, you kind of wonder, okay, maybe some of these stories got blended together and maybe this was a different guy that then was accidentally attributed to him. So there's things like that. So you always have to kind of look at some of the stuff that's been passed down orally and figure out, okay, is this really what happened or is this just kind of close? But Nagamine does a real good job of kind of expanding on what Richard Kim started.
Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
It's a neat book here. I like this one.
Yeah, it's real. It's real good.
So is it a history of an island people?
Yes.
Like an island mean Okinawa, like
right.
The island, the Okinawan island people.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Love an island people.
So that's a good one for the history. Actually, history of Okinawa. But Nagamine, the guy who translated his first book, The Essence of Okinawan Karate, to the English was the guy that I worked out with, Katsuhiko Shinzato. So Shinzato Sensei.
Yep.
Let's see if I can find it.
I remember reading that, glanced through that, and I remember. I think I brought that to your attention that one day.
Yeah, you brought that up, and yeah, absolutely, it's the same guy. So
I recognize the name.
Can't find. I'm trying to look in the title page where it gives you the English translator, but I can't find it. Yeah, the part where I leaf through books doesn't exactly make for great podcasting, so I can. I'll trim
that's
that.
Really
yeah, I will trim this part out. Ah, here it is. Okay. So, what does it say here? I would like to offer my deep appreciation to the following people for the efforts in the realization of this book. K. Shinzato and M. Shiroma, who translated my Japanese manuscript, F. Bear, so-and-so, and so on and so forth. There's a group in Okinawa who have been doing a lot of research on the history of Okinawa and karate. And there's kind of this group of guys that have been working together. So Shinzato's one of them, and then Morio Higaonna is one of them, who's real famous, probably the most famous Goju-ryu style. It's a huge worldwide organization. Shimabuku is another one. So he's a Shorin-ryu guy. He lived in the U.S. for quite a while also, and he knew Grandmaster Treatise and those guys. Mm-hmm. And then a few others, and Takamiyagi is another one. And all these guys speak English really well also, and they're all sort of scholarly. They've worked, like Shinzato was, I believe, the head of the foreign languages department at Ryukyu University. Takamiyagi was also a professor. And some of these other guys are, you know, maybe not professors, but, you know, smart guys.
Well, it's like that goes hand in hand a lot of times when you see really good, you know, martial artists and whatnot, they'll be really successful also.
Yeah, in some other
hand in hand.
In some other part of their life.
Yeah.
You know, they found a way to translate what they were doing in the dojo to some other.
Absolutely.
That's why you see guys that are, you know, doctors or lawyers or, you know, successful businessmen. That a lot of time it goes hand in hand. Sometimes you don't. You know, sometimes that's what they do. They do karate. But there's this group, and they compiled what they called, I think it's called the Okinawan Encyclopedia of Karate or something like that. It has not been translated into English yet, but it's this huge, thick book, and they just have everybody's history in there. Just,
well, you could translate it for us, right?
No.
He said no.
I'm not that good yet, but
get there.
I've been doing research on Tong Ji Sing. Okay.
Yeah, Tong Ji Sing.
So for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, Tong Ji Sing was the first person to teach Grandmaster Treatise karate. But he's this real sort of enigmatic figure because there's not that much that anybody knows about it.
Okay. Just guy in the fog.
Yeah, exactly right. Where did he come from? What did he do? Yeah, and there's a basic information that Grandmaster Treatise talked about, and it's in the Pinnacle and things like that. But there's not a whole lot more information. And so I've been doing quite a bit of research on him and trying to figure out who he was and where he came from. And I've been fairly successful in that. But there was a guy in Okinawa who I would need the biography and translate because I think it's that's the guy. I think it's the same guy.
Ooh.
And so I needed that translated. So I got the article from that book and had one of my friends who really was fluent in Japanese translate that. And so I was able to use that as a resource. But as far as I know, that's the only part that's been translated in English so far. They want to do it, but it's a lot of work. It's an encyclopedia. I mean, it's thicker than the Okinawa, the History of Violent People.
See a book on there on bonsai. So did you ever really get into that, or just pick a book and just read a little bit?
I got into it, but every time I try to grow something, I kill it immediately.
Oh, you're not supposed to practice karate on it.
I've tried that. I've tried that, and
we'll have to get you with Nigel this summer.
Yeah, that's I can't. I've got it a few times, and then anytime I do anything to the tree, it just
deals. Nigel's an aficionado. He's good with bonsai. I wouldn't want to say a bonsai master or anything, but he's actually trained with people. I wish I could remember the exact names now, but he's actually trained with people from Japan, high up on the bonsai scale.
Yeah, and he was telling me he had a couple of trees that were, I don't know how old, 20 or 50 years old or something.
Yeah.
He had them for a long time, and they were really doing well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to talk to him about that.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaker for him. He had all of them in Florida.
Yeah.
He moved here for work and stuff. He left them down there with a good friend. Lady friend of his and her husband,
yeah,
which was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up getting, he got stiffed on.
So now he doesn't even have them anymore. He had trees representing his children and just all different kinds of things. Trees he's been putting work into for 30 years.
Are the trees still alive, or did they just stop watering them and stop taking care of them in there?
We believe they're still alive, but we're not positive. We think they might have had an insight on how much money they were worth, so we were hoping they didn't go that route, but he's kind of just chopped it now.
Yeah, that sucks. That's rough. Because, I mean, those things, they take daily care. You have to water them and do everything like every day. You can't just, you know, stick them out in your yard and let them go.
Another practice of discipline, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We kind of walked into his house one time, and you know, the little bonsais, they're only in little pot, you know, plant potters, you know, pots about, you know, 6 inches tall by 10 inches long, 4 inches wide, you know. And he had a couple sitting out in front of his house with just the sand in them. I'm like, yeah, so Nigel, I have one thing. He goes, I killed him. I let him die. I'm seeing the other thing, and then Travis told me, and Nigel told me, he goes, you know, he loves bonsai. I go,
what did they do to you?
Bite my lip here. I'm like thinking, okay, I guess he does. I guess he gave it up, and he goes, I'm just kidding. because I haven't put any in there yet.
It's weird how the Zen aspect and the mental aspect of bonsai and martial arts go hand in hand, and just how the people like they connect mentally, you know.
Yeah. Well, you're in a similar thing. What was the term? Bumbu Ryudo, the pin and the sword are one. So you know, even the samurai had to learn something. You know, calligraphy or flower arranging or bonsai or whatever it is. You know, you have to have two things. You can't just, you know, be into war. You know, that'll be, it's, you know, too much.
You gotta weigh out the yin and the yang.
Yeah, exactly.
Balance it out.
Good balance.
You can't just be all artsy fartsy all the time. You know, you gotta. The Renaissance man, you know, uses his mind and his body.
The Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Renaissance.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not just even a Japanese thing. You know, the Europeans were thinking that too. Is Nigel still doing bonsai now? So he's got some going?
Yeah, he's still messing with them here and there. Yeah.
Nigel's definitely.
It's summertime, so he's probably going to get booming on them. I'm hoping we get some time off work so he can actually do that.
Travis, he's working on something like that of his own. It's not only bonsai, but it's bamboo.
Bamboo?
it's a lot different.
He's got a bamboo grove going.
It's a lot different.
We got to shoot some sprouts up and it's taking off.
Oh, yeah?
We got that going back there. It's going to create our privacy fence back there.
What'd you do? Just, you know, throw out your old chop suey and they started growing in the in the mulch pit? Or this is an intentional thing.
Went and stole Storch's bamboo. Went and stole a lot of his bamboo.
Yeah, he just transplanted it.
Yeah, I just transplanted it.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get a peaceful thing going back there, blocked off from the neighbors and everything.
Oh,
and
that'd be nice.
He plans on decking it all out with bonsais. He goes, Trav, would you mind, I know it's expensive, but I'm going to buy it. Would you mind if I bought this 4-foot Buddha and put it back there and made a Zen garden? I'm like, no, Nigel, I wouldn't mind at all. Please do.
Go ahead. By all means. I'm going to sit down with Nigel and do an episode on bonsai, too.
Yeah.
Planting and trimming tips.
Yeah, make sure he drinks his rum afterwards.
Afterwards, not before. Well, if he drinks the rum before, he might get some better stories.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
If we can understand the stories.
Oh, we should do a little both.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA. Oh, I forgot to tell you guys. We had someone try to break in this apartment building this weekend.
No, really?
Yeah, yeah. I guess the girl downstairs. Someone was trying to get in her window, and she had to call the cops. This was like, I don't know, like 4 a.m. or something Friday night. I had no idea until the next day, and everyone was talking about it. I don't know what happened. If the cops were out front, or what the deal was. But you think, yeah, it's a, you know, decent neighborhood. You know, they wouldn't.
That's good. You got a hand of peace flute with the cops. Didn't have to do no Shemmy Waza action or nothing.
No, but I mean, here's the thing about the cops, though. I don't think she told anybody. I think she just called the cops. But if someone did break in, I mean, all the cops can do is sort of come down and, you know, take notes on the condition of your corpse. You know, they're not going to show up, even if they're
quick enough.
Even if they're quick enough, they're not going to show up for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. So,
yep,
you know,
exactly.
It'd be, you know, probably a better move would be to go screaming into the hallway and
let people know, and then, you know, let people know why you're calling the cops or something.
Yeah, exactly right. I didn't find out until, like,
because you could do a lot of damage within 10 minutes if you're, you know.
Jesus Christ, I guess, yeah. I mean, this, you know, there's 10 or so people that live in this building, so, you know, someone's going to be able to do something, you know, someone's going to be home.
But, that guy was glad he wasn't breaking in your room.
Yeah.
He'd pick
your
home and break into
it. I've had two situations where I've done this twice. Once, I was dating a girl, and she was staying at my place, but she was pissed off at me about something. And so she said she was, you know, she was going to sleep in my room. She was going to sleep on the couch. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, whatever. And so I went in, I went to sleep, and she fell asleep. Well, sometime in the middle of the night, so she wasn't pissed out at me anymore. So she came in, she snuck down the hall, you know, and she opened the door, and, you know, you kind of heard a little bit of a... And as soon as I heard that, I popped up, I jumped up, I... And I chased her ass down the hall. She goes, stop, stop, stop. And I'm like, oh, yeah. There was someone in my apartment tonight. That's right. Oh, sorry about that. Maybe.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I did the same exact thing. I was supposed to go to this karate seminar. And there was a miscommunication about what time we were going to leave, you know. So they said, okay, we're gonna leave at 5:30. So I thought that was PM.
Yeah.
But apparently it was AM. So I didn't realize that. I thought, okay, so I got all day. So I was gonna sleep in that morning. And then
here they come banging on your
They door. Came bang on my door, but my apartment, my door, my bedroom was in the far back of the apartment, the door was in the front, so I didn't hear anybody banging on the door. Mm-hmm. And I guess they called my mom, and my mom started panicking and freaking out, and they called the cops. And so there's this whole big thing, thinking that I was dead or kidnapped or something like that. I just didn't sleep. I think I had to sleep in that morning. And so my grandpa came to the apartment complex, and they weren't going to let him in. We're not going to. And he goes, if you don't let me in this room, in his apartment, I'm going to bust down the goddamn door. And I'm, you know, asleep, I'm fine. Because they're panicking. They're just, you know,
overreacting.
Complete overreacting. And so the maintenance guy for the apartment says, okay, well, I'll go back. So he unlocks the door, and he comes in my room. I did the same thing to him. I woke up, and I chased his ass down the hall. And I, here he's just some scruffy looking guy with a beard and long hair and, you know, ratty jeans. I mean, this is not, you know, this is, you know, not the cute Asian girl that I was, you know, was previously. I'm like, oh, hey, baby, you know, oh, nice to wake up to you. This is, I do not know this guy. And I chased him down. He ran out and out the front door. Well, as soon as he ran out the front door, my grandpa was standing out in the hallway. So I'm like, oh, what? What are you doing?
What are you doing?
I'm like, we thought you were dead. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I mean, duh.
So.
What was the look of the maintenance man's face?
He was scared as shit. He was scared as shit.
Did he any clue at all that you had any martial arts training experience or anything?
I have no idea. It's hard to walk into an apartment and not see the various weapons and blank certificates hanging around. But I don't think that he did, and I had no idea that he was going to be in, that he was going to be doing this, so.
That's pretty funny.
So, I don't know, it's
Wake up. You're probably one of the most humble people I've met, but that's enough to, that's enough to bring out the other side right there, waking up and seeing the old scrub.
Yeah, I know who the hell it is. You know, some random guy.
Oh, sure, Travis, I got this.
That's not smart. Some people are trigger happy and stuff, man. That's not smart at all.
No, it's not, because you don't know. Well, That's Illinois doesn't have a concealed carry, but you could still have a gun in your house, you know. It could have been.
That's almost the point, because you're in the cross of, you know, subconscious and conscious mind there. So you're kind of waking up and you're not really, you know, that's accident could happen quick like that.
That's exactly right, because I didn't wake up and think, oh, I'm going to chase this guy down the hall. It's just I heard something. I was on my feet and chasing this guy before I could really figure out what was
going on. And then you're kind of waking up talking to your grandpa.
Like, what was going on? I'm like, yeah, well, what are you doing here, old man?
Like, wait, pinch, am I dreaming or not here? What's going on?
Right, so then I knew something was going on. Well, yeah, guys, thanks for sitting down with me and doing this episode.
Yeah, that was a good time.
I'll do another one in the near future.
Certainly.
All right, thanks.
Absolutely.
All right.
That's all for today's episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, coworker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.